Welcome to the Film on the Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 9:40 British Summer Time. Today is August 20th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. The week started out with a generally positive tone, but we saw downward dynamics on Wall Street and a number of European markets in the middle of the week, and a little bit of follow-through yesterday and indeed today, particularly in Europe. And one of the things that we've been saying over the last 6 weeks is that markets would have to hold 50% of their gains if the medium-term bullish outlook was about to be reasserted. And we're at a decision point right now because the S&P has retraced about 50% of its gain from the July low. It's an open question as to whether it's about to find support in here right now. We don't have any evidence of that just yet. An unflinching upward dynamic would certainly lend credence to that hypothesis. In the meantime, sentiment has deteriorated really quite remarkably over the last week. That's at least in part due to the fact that government bond prices continue to accelerate higher. And there is a strong degree of commonality right across the government bond markets with US treasuries, gilts, bunds, JGBs, and a number of others all rallying in no uncertain terms. That's pricing in really rather a deflationary environment. This week was notable in terms of some of the records set in the bond markets. It was a record low for 2-year yields. It was a record low for 30-year German yields. And we see that US Treasury, the 10-year Treasury, is accelerating lower in terms of the yield and becoming really quite overextended as it approaches the 2009 lows. Now, one really does have to take a step back and look at this in terms of the bigger picture. Sorry, before I do that, let me finish the review. Gold was a little bit softer in here today, but has been rallying all week and is up into the region of $1,230. Silver remains around the $18 level. Both platinum and palladium are off the lower sides of their trading ranges, but still remain in a somewhat uncertain environment. The industrial metal complex was firmer in the beginning of the week and weaker into the end of the week, particularly aluminium, which has pulled back rather sharply but is now testing the first area of potential support. The US dollar was also a bit stronger in here today, so we do have the safe havens of the US dollar, gold, and US treasuries all showing some relative strength against the background of rather weak stock markets. The wheat price, which had been accelerating higher over the last couple of months or the last 6 weeks or so, remains in the region of the 700 cent level. Soybeans remains around the $10 level, and corn remains above the $4 level. So we've had a little bit of a pause in the agricultural, or sorry, the grains and bean complex. But no real evidence that this bullish move is over in here. Sugar was also notable today in that it was really quite strong, finding support, sustaining the progression of higher reaction lows, and it does look like it could go higher. Taking that step back, when you look at where yields are going and you compare today to what we had back at the beginning of 2009, which was immediately following a horrendous crash and a massively traumatic experience for the vast majority of investors. The same simply isn't true today. We've had remarkable stimulus, and there's still the potential that we could have more stimulus. And whereas in 2008 and early 2009, people really were beginning to talk depression. And I'm starting to see reports talking about depression again, but there's absolutely no evidence of a global depression, particularly when one contrasts the performance of emerging markets with the USA, Europe, and Japan. They're leading the world in terms of economic growth, and they're share of the global economy is only getting bigger. The trade between emerging markets is growing at an impressive pace, and they're becoming less swayed by what's happening in markets such as the USA and Europe. Now, of course, the USA and Europe are still massive markets and some of the biggest economies in the world. But at the same time, we have the growth of the emerging markets. They have a demographic dividend in terms of masses of young people entering the workplace over the next decade and more. And they are facing challenges such as managing their growth, attempting to manage infrastructure development and service development. And those are secular themes. Regardless of what happens in the rest of the world, it's not going to stop young people getting older in these emerging markets. And their governments are not in a position where they have a choice. They have to improve the standard of living for these young people who are highly aspirational. And that is likely to drive a major bull market in potentially even a bubble in the emerging markets over the coming decade or perhaps longer. It's certainly no mistake that we see that the consumer-related sectors are outperforming in China, in India, in Brazil, in Indonesia. And that's no mistake, because we've got masses of new middle-class people. Their demand for the things that we take for granted in the West, such as cars, food, cosmetics, is continuing to grow, and that's an important secular theme. We're also seeing that the food markets have had the boost. One of the additional interest in the sector, because wheat has moved to the upside, and a number of other grains are also pushing upwards. People have got to eat, and the new middle class have got the money to improve their diets. And that is certainly helping to drive interest in that particular sector. The commodity sector has, or the industrial metals sector, has pulled back a little bit into the end of this week, but those industrial metal prices are certainly don't have a depression written all over them. They more indicate that they probably got a little bit ahead of themselves or rallied too fast in too short a time, and have probably moved into another consolidation. The same could possibly be said of some of these stock markets, and I think that the most likely prognosis, particularly for some of those European markets, is additional ranging as some of the fiscal tightening measures take their toll on the stock market. Now, areas in the US and in Europe that are continuing to lead to the upside are, of course, the export sector, which is feeding directly into that secular theme of emerging markets. But people are also starting to look at higher yield, and we've written a fair share over the last couple of weeks about high-yielding stocks. We've classified Wall Street as being in a secular bear market in terms of valuations for much of the last decade, and we define that as a generational-long period of P/E ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. And we didn't talk too much about it in 2007. 2006, because the Dow was making new highs, and the point wasn't really getting across that you can have cyclical bull markets within a secular bear market. And what we have now is yields beginning to rise. The yield available on high cash flow, global exporting niche companies is significantly above what's available currently on the 10-year treasury. And particularly with treasury yields continuing to compress, that difference is only going to get larger. And a large number of household name companies are now yielding really quite impressive figures. So that should help to put a cushion under some of those share prices. It does suggest that investors are beginning to look for a more secure return on their investment and are demanding a higher dividend for investing in shares. But it certainly doesn't hurt in this environment that if you have a domestic market in the US and Europe, which is really quite moribund, that you can invest in shares that are outperforming in terms of the total return. And since a large number of them are in base formations, you're being paid to wait. So the high yield sector is certainly one that I think will continue to garner increased investor interest. And of course, there are a number of shares that remain in really quite impressive uptrends and are also paying competitive dividends. And those are either in the utilities sector, but for example, McDonald's pays over 3% and is in a highly impressive consistent uptrend, and while it's probably a little bit overdone in the short term, it has certainly got plenty of upside potential. And the of course, McDonald's is a major exporter, or a major co a company that's consolidating its earnings back into the US. So these high yield shares, I think, are going to continue to be a focus for investor interest, and we're seeing that there are more funds coming online where people are looking for higher yielding shares in the emerging markets, where you can get the benefit both of the expanding market and of companies that have strong cash flows and are willing to pay that out in terms of a dividend to their investors. And that is probably likely to be an increasingly lucrative way of looking at some of these emerging markets. The growth in emerging markets is likely to be secular in nature. ASEAN in particular has been leading to the upside, but is becoming overextended in the very short term, with Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, Thailand, all becoming relatively overextended compared to their moving averages. This isn't the time to be buying these markets. They will inevitably revert to their means, and when we do see that these favored markets do return to their mean, that's the better buying opportunity. These markets have years yet to run, and particularly for some of those old Asian tiger markets, when one looks at 20 and 30 years of history, a large number of them are well below their 1997 highs, the Asian financial crisis. And it's certainly not inconceivable to look at these longer term and think that those 1997 highs are certainly attainable, and over a 10 or 15, even 20-year period, that they will be surmounted in no uncertain terms. The US dollar has firmed somewhat over the last week and is benefiting from the strength of US treasuries and by people basically looking on it as a safe haven. Against the euro, it does appear to be that the dollar has bottomed, and the euro, it remains under pressure in here. That's likely to be really quite a good story for the European export sector, particularly in Northern Europe. I've seen a great deal of commentary talking about the imbalances in Europe, but that isn't something that's going to change anytime soon. Germany's certainly not going to sacrifice its competitiveness for the benefit of its erstwhile neighbors. So we can anticipate that the euro is a long-term problem currency, which and the inherent contradiction of having one monetary policy and 15, or is it 16, different fiscal policies is something that will have to be ironed out at some point in the future. In the meantime, I don't think there's any risk of the euro disintegrating, but it remains under pressure. It's given up some of its recent advance against the US dollar. The phenomenally bearish commentary that was coming out when the euro was down in the region of 120 and 121 has dissipated somewhat. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see the euro dollar continuing to range between this 120 and 130 for a while longer. And there is, I think, a strong likelihood that we're not going to see any chance of Europe and the USA outperforming in this environment. The question, I think, remains as to just how far emerging markets will pull back if we do see that these markets deteriorate to an extent that they move into a downtrend. But in that worst case scenario, and I don't rate that as even a 50-50 chance, I think probably 60, maybe 70-30, then emerging markets will offer us a very, very good buying opportunity in that type of environment. I think there's a lot of people would love to be buying at March 2009 levels, and they're probably just not going to get them. The S&P, if one decides to just take a step back and look at it over 5 years or even 10 years, has been consolidating above its base for much of the last year. It could easily fall back and test the upper side of the base and still remain within a medium-term bullish environment. And given the fact that sentiment is so remarkably bearish at this juncture, one can only imagine how bearish it would be if we do start to see that those July lows are retested or indeed potentially even taken out. That's probably looking a bit too far ahead. We're absolutely nowhere near that right now. Certainly, we've had a pullback over the last week, and there's a very heightened level of anxiety out there. But we really do the I think that the best way to characterize it is that this is very much a decision point for markets, and where we go in the next week or two will have, I think, a large bearing on where we go over the next few months. Gold is also at really quite an interesting juncture in here. It's rallied really quite consistently over the last couple of weeks, and it's established itself back above the $1,200 level. There's a lot of people starting to think about, well, is gold going to speed up? It had rallies in 2009 and 2007 and 2005, all in September and October, and they're looking at it within $30, $40 of its all-time high, and thinking, is it going to do it again this September? The question is that it, or the answer, I guess, is that it might, but it has put a little bit of a stalk on to get up to these levels, and I think that there's probably room for some consolidation of recent gains before we do see a retest of the highs. It was down a little bit in here today, down to 1227. And my only caveat, or something that's holding me back from getting into gold, is the fact that palladium hasn't exactly been setting the world on fire here. It was the clear leader from the early part of this year, and it's lost its uptrend consistency. So we've lost the leader for this part of the cycle in the precious metals. And that is a note of caution that I'm very slow to ignore. That said, if gold does consolidate and hold the majority of its gains over the last month and more, then there is a strong likelihood that it will be able to push on to new high ground. But I think, in the absence of a pullback to the 200-day moving average, I'll be waiting for it to move on to new high ground. Now, looking longer term on gold, the Dow gold ratio has contracted really quite considerably over the last decade, and it's gone from somewhere over 40 to about 8. And it means that you need big number moves in the Dow and the S&P to move the ratio a full point now. That would suggest that We would need the third psychological perception stage of a bull market, which would be characterized by euphoria, and in the case of gold, it would be gold fever. That's not beyond the bounds possibility at all. Gold remains in a secular bull market. It's one of the few assets that has churned out a positive return every year for the last decade. And that fact will increasingly, I think, be appreciated by investors. With the deflationary scare that is out there, and we know that central banks will increasingly, well, they'll increase the supply of money in order to attempt to stimulate the economy. And that is basically reducing the purchasing power of various currencies, and with governments taking on increasing the amounts of debt, there is a very valid reason for having something that has a real store of value. Gold fever is certainly a possibility. We don't see any evidence of it just yet. Certainly signs of that would of course be prices moving on to new high ground, appreciating in a much more rapid fashion. But also we would see things like we saw back in the heyday of the tech bubble, where people are giving up their job to go and trade tech stocks. They would be the same thing. They'd be just giving up their job and going to trade gold or gold shares or ETFs or leveraged ETFs. That could yet happen. We just don't see any evidence of it yet. But the clear indication that we would be moving into a more bullish environment for gold would be a speeding up of this period of 18-month consolidations and successful upward breaks, and then another 18-month consolidation. Well, if we did see it moving up to new high ground in September or October this year, well, that would be a marked picking up of the pace of gold's bull market. And that really then would be indicating that we're into the final stage. And of course, the final stage of the bull market is the one where it's easiest to make money because you get very large moves to the upside. So where gold goes in the next 2 months is going to be a very interesting period indeed. Because if it is going to go into a major gold fever, then we would expect the uptrend to pick up pace at some stage. Personally, I would rather it move into another one of these 18-month consolidations, let it go up a little bit more, drag out this major bull market for a while longer, and we will all profit even more from it. But at the moment, I'm waiting for the breakout or a pullback in which to initiate a position. I'm not really willing to pay up for it, given that over the last decade, paying up for commodities has seldom been a very wise move. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.